I'm Blake Hardcastle. This is the Stories You've Missed podcast.
Welcome back to the podcast, Stories You've Missed. These are accounts of God's amazing grace in the lives of ordinary people at Grand Parkway Baptist Church. I'm your host, Blake Hardcastle, and I serve as a spiritual formation pastor at Grand Parkway. And this podcast is designed to aid in the building up of this local body by retelling the amazing works of God. My guests today are Ed and Jane Richards. Ed and Jane have been married for 59 years, almost 60. They have three children, Melinda, David, and Kathleen, and eight grandchildren and four great-grandchildren. Ed served in the U.S. Air Force and worked in early computers where they would take up a whole entire room. He's been a professor. Jane's worked in the home, raising a family, and has taught high school English for over 20 years. She's a quilter. Together, they've been beekeepers and vast hikers, and they've been members of Grand Parkway for over 20 years. Welcome, Ed and Jane.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we're here today to talk about the grace you've experienced from God in nearly 60 years of marriage. So I want you to tell us quickly, how did you two meet?
We met in our local church.
Okay. And where was that at?
In Memphis, Tennessee.
Okay.
I had been a member of that church all my life, had been away at school.
And where
for
would you go to school?
4 years. Went to Southwest Baptist Junior College in Missouri, and then went to Oklahoma Baptist University in Shawnee, Oklahoma.
Okay. And you were back between your junior and senior year?
No, actually, I didn't meet him until Easter of my senior year.
Okay.
I had come home for the holidays, and he sang a solo.
Okay.
He and his family had moved into the church while I was away at school. And I heard him sing, and I fell immediately in love with his voice.
Really?
Did not know him.
Okay.
And being so.
Is he a crooner? What kind of voice does he have?
He's a crooner.
Okay.
Oh, I'm not a crooner.
Oh, yes. Yes. He's a crooner.
Sing by letter. Open up and let her fly.
Okay. So, Ed, what's your first memory of meeting Jane? Did you see someone beaming from you in the audience?
No. I didn't meet her at this point in time. She'd already graduated. I had two. I graduated in January. She graduated in May of 61. And I was already there, again, back at the church. I've been there a couple of years. We, being the church, were buying homes around the building because they were expanding. Anytime in Memphis, their home became available. They wanted the land, so they bought the homes. And we met, we being the after high school, college, that age group.
Yes.
Met in the next door
home.
Young
professionals or young adults, yes.
There you go. And we had training union back then, remember training union?
Yes.
And I was the leader of the youth group that was us, were meeting there, that particular group. My little job was to welcome people and say hi and then sit down and somebody else did something, somebody did something.
Now, were you working
a
full-time job at this point?
I was at Firestone getting ready to go into the Air Force.
So, work at Firestone Tire Company.
Yes, I did that during college.
Okay, and in the Air Force, you were enlisting. Were you officer training?
Officer training, and then went to officer and did all that for 5 years. Anyway, Sunday night we were there, and I was making my little introduction and all to the 15 or 20 people there and talking. I don't mind talking in front of people.
Okay.
And here comes the couple of girls back. I knew the first one; I'd known her for a couple of years, Sandra Hill. And here was this other girl who I'd never seen before in my life. And that first, and this is a true story right here. First thought I had was, ooh, I'm going to ask her for a date. I'm going to date that girl. Didn't know who she was.
Okay.
And that's how we met.
Yes.
Sandra later, who I knew, I don't know if she introduced me that
night. Kind of like Adam and Eve. At last.
Yes. Finally. And that was my impression then. And let me finish this up a little bit because it was not... We didn't get along too good at the beginning.
Okay. So, Jane, you heard this voice. Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember this? You're
6 months later, 3 months later.
Mm-hmm. What I remember is he welcomed me as a visitor.
Okay.
And I was a member of that church all my life. So it didn't start well.
He asked you to fill out a visitor card or?
No, he just welcomed me.
Okay.
And I knew everybody in the crowd. And he welcomed me. We're so glad you're visiting. So.
And she made a comment to the fact that she'd been there a long time. Yeah. And I made a comment to the effect that.
At least I come. So, no.
And it was love ever since.
She shut me down right then.
Yeah.
And I just kept coming.
You guys began operating, negotiating conflict right away.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We learned what to ignore and what not to ignore.
Sort of. I'm not.
So when did this shift from, I think this is, maybe I won't get a date with her, to weeks?
A few weeks.
Okay.
We both sang in the choir.
All right.
She lived 3 or 4 blocks from the church. I had, by this time, I had a little red Volkswagen Beetle, and I come to church Wednesday nights, typical. And I can remember going up to the choir there upstairs. And when we got down, I got in front of her. Remember, I said I was going to date her and said, I knew by this time she had walked home. And you could walk in Memphis at that time, mm-hmm. at night. And I said, I'll take you home.
And she said,
okay.
And then I took her home by, we were in deep east Memphis. I took her home by West Memphis, so on the other side of the Mississippi River.
Like a taxi driver trying to pad the fare?
About 4 or 9 miles from there for about 2 hours.
Now, were you aware? Oh, he's taking the long way home.
Okay. Sure.
Did you mind?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Okay.
One thing led to another. I finally asked her for a date.
And now, you were kind of on a date, unofficially, no? The two of you were alone. Yeah.
I spent all the time telling her about me.
Okay. True. That is a true story.
What were some of his accolades he tried to woo you with?
Oh, I don't remember.
Don't remember either. I was
a
good guy.
Just talked nonstop, but if you know Ed, that's not unusual.
I was nervous, of course.
Yeah.
And so I talked and I talked and I talked and I talked, and she just sat over there and listened. Took me about a week or two to ask her for a date. It was the third or the fourth date. Is this too personal? The third or the fourth date before I actually touched her. I kissed her.
No. Okay.
Third or the fourth date. And she said, about time. I remember that. Clears about time. I was not real comfortable, cool with girls, even though I was, but not romantic wise.
Now, is he telling all the facts as they really were?
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Did you think this guy liked me or not? What's his deal?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I knew he liked me.
Okay.
That wasn't hard.
Yeah, it was very obvious. I liked that girl.
But by that time, we were both out of college.
Yeah.
You know,
you're kind of ready for the next phase in life.
You start looking for a little more serious connections.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
And he was it. I mean, he had had the same background.
Mm-hmm.
He had the same beliefs. We both were Christian. We both loved God and
had jobs.
That's hard to find, especially today.
And how important were those foundational things? As you think about 6 decades of marriage, how have those been significant?
They have been significant. I firmly believed had we not had that background,
mm-hmm.
both of us, we would not be together today.
Mm.
I think the world tries to tear people apart.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to have something to hang on to.
So in many ways, you're probably different from one another. But in these ways that were important.
We were very different, really, ultimately.
Yes, we were.
But these things, because they were so similar, that foundation was critical.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. At what point did you know, I think this could be, the one?
I did pretty quickly. But again.
In the Volkswagen?
In the Volkswagen. This was April, May. No, May, June, I guess.
It was the summer.
And I was going into the Air Force in September. So I had 3 months.
Okay. You got to hustle this up.
With her. Yes. And but this time, and she was going to Missouri. I was going to Texas. She was going to Missouri, teacher for school group. So we were 2 or 3 months away.
Had you already worked as a teacher, or would it be your first year teaching?
It would be my first year.
Okay.
Starting
and you were
September.
Aware he was going to the Air Force?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I still did it, yeah. But we wrote a lot of letters back and forth. I don't think I ever called you. She was in Independence, which is outside Kansas City.
Yes, I know where it's at.
And I was at San Antonio. And we wrote letters fairly regular. I never did call you or nothing. We were going to meet at December.
Okay.
Because I was getting out of the OTS.
Yep.
And she was going to have a Christmas break.
Right. Now, at this point, are either one of you feeling like, I'm ready to put my whole self in this relationship?
I wasn't.
You were not.
I think I was.
Okay.
I think. I don't really know.
I didn't know him that well.
She was the only the only girl I was thinking about. So I never back this truck up. I never dated. I only dated 5 or 6 girls in my whole life.
Yeah.
I never dated a girl that I, standard wise, that I did not think I could marry.
Hmm. Okay.
I didn't mean I was going to marry them,
right.
But I had the standards that if I could not marry them, I was not going to waste my time or money on a girl. I couldn't afford it.
Just for entertainment or distraction.
I couldn't do it. So I didn't. So anybody I dated, I could have married. Every one of them dumped me. Every one, 6 of them. Every one of them dumped me.
Let me say, now, was there an average time, like 3 months, 4 months?
3 months.
Oh, 3 months. Okay.
4 months. Yes.
Now, were you thinking, ooh, it's getting around month 3.
Yes.
Hands are getting sweaty. Is she going to dump me?
That's 6 months, 7 months. That wasn't bad.
No.
Yes. The record. But somewhere during that time, between September and November, I determined I'm going to marry her.
Okay. And are you, is he foreshadowing this in his letters or anything?
Yes.
Oh, in what way?
In fact, he never did propose.
Okay.
He sent a letter.
I've regretted this for 60 some odd years. We do not have that memory.
Okay.
No proposal. I started writing my letters about when we get married and after we're married and that kind of statements made.
Yeah.
And then I mailed her an engagement ring.
Now, on the scale of romance, 1 to 10.
Minus. There were mitigating circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had an accident. He was on his way home. He was going
This was after I'd mailed her.
Yeah.
Mailed her the ring.
Before the Christmas break?
Oh, wait a minute. I had mailed you the ring. No, I'm sorry. You're right. Okay.
Yeah.
This was Christmas.
He was going to ask me at Christmas,
March.
And
yeah.
he had an accident on the way home, and it was pretty bad. And
I was in the hospital on Christmas.
Yeah, totaled
61.
His car.
So and did he you made see him at all in that time?
No.
Wow.
He made it back to Memphis the day I left to go back to Missouri.
2 week break. I was in the hospital several days. And I had to take a train, my only train ride from San Antonio to Memphis, and carrying all my stuff because I had no car.
Yeah.
And we spent a day, maybe 2 days there. I tried to get a car and junk like that. I'd boogered up my head. My eyes were bloody, and I couldn't drive. Finally got glasses again so I could see to legally drive.
Hmm.
And she had to go back.
Jane, at what point did you know he's the one?
I think then, yeah. At Christmas,
When you saw him?
When I realized he'd been in an accident.
Yeah.
Hurt.
Yeah.
You know, I've heard other people talk about, I'm pretty sure this is the one, not because I was so certain I wanted to do life with this person, but I was certain I did not want to do life without this person.
Yeah.
And kind of facing the loss of them. Okay, no, I don't want to have that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, so it makes you think.
You go back to school. And you're on leave?
I go from the school to my training.
Oh, okay.
I went to Biloxi, Mississippi to actually go to the training after I'd gotten my commission.
Okay. Now, when does the ring get purchased? That's what I'm...
I don't know. When did you purchase the ring?
That was Christmas, December, January. First of January, we went to Biloxi, and she was in Independence. And I, February, March, I don't know. I've been in Biloxi enough that I knew where this jewelry store was. Carol Jewelry.
That's when he bought the ring and mailed it to me.
And with a little note along the lines of, "If I hope you'll wear this," or something like that. I never did ask her to marry me.
Okay. Now, you were aware that's a custom.
Yes.
Okay.
I think I've said 14 or 97 times I've missed that memory. We don't have a memory.
Yeah.
Of me proposing to her.
Yeah. I'm not just an idea machine or anything, but you do have a 60th anniversary coming up, and maybe you could propose then.
Ooh.
Be a little late.
Well, better late than never, some people say.
Have a marrying again. Yeah.
Now, what was it like to receive a ring in the mail?
It was not fun, but I appreciated it because I knew enough about him by then.
Okay. So, Bort, you said before, I didn't think I knew him well enough. Now you knew him well enough.
Yes. I realized... He was serious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very serious.
Yeah.
It was a beautiful ring.
So it's some kind of, you're still wearing it right now.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now. How about that? You open this package and there's a note and a ring and do you put it on? What do you do with it? Did you try it on? Did you?
I put it on. I don't remember details. I don't remember being upset. I think I knew Christmas was past and we had, you know, weeks and weeks of.
You weren't going to see each other again until maybe summer or spring. Okay. Next time you leave and you're off
through
school.
Letters, we decided to get married in June.
Okay. So you planned a wedding-ish through the mail.
Exactly.
Do you think some today people just, they don't know how easy they have it with, you know, the video call someone.
Right. It was not easy. I just kind of plopped it into my family's lap and they took care of it.
Yeah.
But this time I'd met her family. Mom and Dad were both dead.
Okay.
She lived with her grandparents there in Memphis. So I met both of the grandparents. Her grandma. Her grandma. I remember she gave her a hat pin to carry with her on dates. So if he got fresh.
Yeah. Oh, I'd give him a little poke. Yeah.
Did she carry Mad Money too? Did you have
Yes. That? Always had Mad Money.
So you got married in June.
Mm-hmm.
And
between my school and my first assignment,
yeah.
I got a 30-day leave.
Okay. All right. And after that, did you your first posting, first assignment in the Air Force, did you go with your wife?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you taught for 1 year, which always they say is the hardest year of teaching, right? Your first year.
This was my second year.
Oh, second year. Okay. Second year.
Got to Kansas Independent. She had first year. Whiteman, Knob Noster, Missouri. She got a job there second year while I was working too.
Okay. And your posting was where in the world?
Right in the middle of Missouri at Whiteman Air Force Base at Sedalia, between Sedalia and Warrensburg. It's about 70 miles east of Kansas City.
Anything noteworthy about that first year of marriage?
You got pregnant, our first child.
He also, in an argument, hit the wall.
Oh. Oh, okay.
Ooh. You want me to tell you about that?
Yeah.
Clarity of minds.
She's very independent and has been all of her life because she had pretty much do a lot of things on her own.
She is from Missouri, you know.
And she was parentless.
I was born in Greene County, Springfield, Missouri.
So. Okay, Springfield. She was on her own from 15, something like
16.
Mama died. Yeah. Daddy was killed in the war. Okay. Mama died then. So she's very independent, making decisions and all. And I was used to being in charge. I was independent, but I suspect that girls were supposed to listen to boys, a husband, wife, that kind of thing. And I was telling her things to do, and sometimes she would, sometimes she would not do things. And I could still see this in my mind. We had the place we were living on base at the time, officers' quarters, and it was not air-conditioned, and I could air-condition it if I paid for it. Mm-hmm. So I got a windy unit big enough to do it. It wasn't a very big apartment. I bought it, installed it myself, and then it became theirs, of course, but we used it for the year or so that we lived there. And I was trying to, because we paid for electricity and the air conditioner, I was trying to say, all right, do this and do this and do this, reference taking care of the air conditioner. And she was not doing that. And after once or three times of telling her that, I remember it was lunch, and I was riled because she was really ignoring my directions. And so I left, and I remember this room there that we were in, kind of a living room. And I left, and I just whacked the wall real hard.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you were thinking about hitting me. Wasn't that pretty much what you were thinking? Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah. And I went to work. By the way, I've never hit my wife. I have no excuse for anybody hitting, no abuse, husband or wife.
Yeah.
Okay, but I thought about it. Now, that brings up another thing to a normal couple is there will be times when you want to kill the other one and hurt the other one and beat up on the other.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that.
Well, yeah.
But you'll still have the thoughts.
That kind of honest communication where you ask, this is what you're thinking. And yes, do you find that less common? I find that incredibly helpful when people are aware of what they really think, what they really feel, and they feel really some freedom in a relationship to share those. I find that incredibly powerful.
One of the problems I've had with her all along, today, 60 years, I have terrible time communicating around my real feelings. I get quiet when I'm angry. She unloads when she's angry. I wish I could do that more because I have trouble. I have trouble telling you what's going on inside me. Big time. We've done it a few times, fortunately. But I've skipped a lot, too. I'll just get away, be quiet, leave. I can remember once I went 3 days without speaking to her. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And she came to me in the bedroom when I was leaving or something. You remember that? I'll tell them about it.
There have been more than one.
Okay, well, instances. This particular one. She said, "Do you still love me?"
Yeah.
I said, "There's nobody in this world that I think more of than you. Wonder what you." I hadn't spoken to her. I mean, nothing. Nothing for 3 full days.
That kind of puts a damper on arguments, too. You want to be careful. You don't want to argue if the other person is going to withdraw, because that doesn't solve anything.
No, it makes it worse.
Yes.
Changes the volume.
I wish I could do it, not so much. But that's my tendency, been my tendency all of my adult life is, I told her, I said, "Why don't you talk to me? Why don't you talk to me?" And I said, "If I say something to you, I'll say something that hurts you." And she says, "My relationship with you is strong enough I can handle that." But I said, "I don't want to hurt you." And I've avoided it for the most part.
Now, at some point, you got stationed overseas. And how long after was that?
2 years.
Okay.
The next,
64 married, 62 married, 64 we went to the Philippines.
Okay. And you have one child at this point?
At this point, we had one baby.
Okay. And you're in the Philippines.
She had just been born.
She's born in November. I went over in July.
Okay.
So she was 7-8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And she was supposed to come to me. We had base housing and all like that. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be 3 months, they told us when I went. And then because of the humongous blow up in Vietnam, a lot of troops and all went over there. A lot of people that had left the States before I did, and that's how you got your base housing or got authorization to come over. They transferred in, took up all the available housing, and so it ended up being 9 months instead of 3 months.
Your wife and daughter could join you.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. How long did you guys live in the Philippines?
Year and a half.
Okay. And during that
Once
time,
I got there.
Your family expanded?
Yes.
Okay.
We had a boy that did the yard and washed the car and all like that, had a house girl, Cora.
Which was normal in the Philippines.
Oh, yes, normal. And we got her through the church where we went to, and she lived with us. And she lived with us from Sunday afternoon till, Saturday afternoon, something like that.
But you're asking about the children, right?
Yeah. This is David, right?
Yes.
Well, I was pregnant almost immediately after I joined him in April.
The very last day of March, I remembered, because she should have come from 1st to the 31st. I was hoping the 1st, she came on the 31st.
Anyway, I miscarried that baby at 3 months. And we had really wanted 2 years for some reason. We wanted 2 years in between each child.
Yeah.
And I had, in the States, when I was alone, I had thought a lot about adoption.
Okay.
I had read a lot about adoption.
Where did that come from, you think?
I from God, of course.
Yeah.
You know, because it had never been a part of my, I didn't know anybody who was adopted. I had not even thought about that.
Yeah.
But I really had, and I even asked him in a letter, "Have you ever considered adoption?"
He?
I don't think he had.
I never even thought about it.
Yeah.
Never crossed my mind.
You knew what it was.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
But in the Philippines, there were so many children of American servicemen and Filipino ladies, and they were just
unwanted
doomed.
Children.
They were unwanted, definitely.
Yeah.
And because they were biracial, you know, they never were going to be able to really have a successful life. So that's where we started
looking. Yeah.
We had friends who adopted a child there while we were there, and I asked her about it. She told me how she did it, so we started looking.
Yeah. And then from when you started looking to when there's a baby in your hands. How long was that process?
3 months.
September, December.
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Was there ever any moments of fear that this might not work out? We might not get to keep this baby.
Oh, yes. 9 months of fear.
9 months of fear. Holding
your
breath.
9 months of fear.
Okay.
Yes.
A birth. And what, so 9 months of you, this is David, your son, having him, but it was possible he could be taken away?
Up until we got on the plane to leave.
To leave to go back to U.S.
The next July.
Wow. Anytime he could have been.
Anytime.
And there wouldn't be a thing legally we could have done about it.
Mm.
The states, the State Department, the Air Force,
sure.
Nobody could have done about it.
Okay.
I could have done anything about it. And we knew that.
Were there any scares?
Yes.
Oh.
The mother came. Was it the mother
No.
or the sister?
Sister.
Sister came and wanted to know what was going on. She mm-hmm. didn't know that her sister had given this baby up.
Yeah.
And she wanted to know what's going on.
The family had ostracized her. They brought shame to the family.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ed said, if you don't think that we'll be good parents, then you have the right to take him back.
Mm-hmm.
But we love him.
We give him up.
And she said, she seemed satisfied.
Yeah.
So.
What sustained you during that time? That fearful time?
I don't know. Fear, I don't know. I really don't know. That was not a good time.
We prayed about it, but I don't think we were worried pray about it. We were just, we'd kind of come to the conclusion early on mm-hmm. when we found out about this, because the base lawyer told us this right at the beginning.
Yeah.
We talked to the Air Force guy, and he said they could take it up, and we determined then they'll come to you for money, all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Get him, get you bribed and whatever. And we determined real quickly, if that happens, we're giving him up.
Mm.
And that was not a pleasant decision.
Yeah.
And we,
but isn't that what God wants us to do? When we pray and say, God, it's in your hands, mm-hmm. then we have to be willing to accept what God has decided.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if that's what he decided, we had to be willing.
Willing to do that, yeah. You know, when circumstances like this, we're forced to trust him, because we're powerless.
Yes, exactly.
You know?
Yes, yes.
And
which is kind of nice after the fact.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah, now.
During.
Oh, we're so glad.
Not before or during.
Do you recall a moment where maybe it was on the tarmac, on the plane, where you finally, and he's definitely ours.
When they closed the door on the plane.
Okay.
The plane was leaving the ground.
Yeah.
It was it.
Hmm.
Because they couldn't get him back from the States.
Hmm. When you're going through the airport where people are looking at you, oh, here's another American taking a Filipino baby.
I don't remember any stigma whatsoever.
Yeah.
No. Okay. We had two little kids.
Yeah.
Two and six months.
He was 9 months.
9 months.
He was
September
months.
To July. Yeah. And Kathleen was November to July over two.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. What's something that comes to mind that has surprised you in these decades of marriage of one another?
Surprised us?
Or do you recall something where...
Unexpected, you mean?
Yeah, unexpected. Yeah. Or here's something God did we weren't asking for, we weren't expecting. He did this.
When we got out, I was in grad school, and she was working, and after having the woman live with us and take care of everything,
right?
Everything, and suddenly she had two little babies.
Okay.
And a husband that was in school and not doing anything.
Yeah.
And she was responsible for all this stuff and very depressed. I can remember lying in the bed there, that king-size bed mattress, and the word divorce came up in this discussion we were having.
And what time frame in marriage? A year?
2 years.
Oh no.
66. So,
Okay. 4 years.
Okay.
4 years.
Yeah. All right. And you know, obviously that didn't happen.
Scared both of us.
Okay.
Scared me, scared her too. And we made a commitment then. I remember that. We made a commitment. No matter what happened, you'll kill me, I'll kill you. But we'll never say divorce again. The term is not acceptable in our relationship anymore.
Okay. What would you say to a younger couple who, maybe it's year 5, year 10, And for whatever reasons, lots of them, things just are not satisfying. And they have lingering thoughts of maybe life would be better if I left. What would you say to that?
I feel sorry for people today because that is in the back of their mind. When they get married, it's in the back of their mind.
Right.
And when how do you deal with that?
It's like an escape clause.
Keyword, commitment.
There's always an escape clause. And they enter marriage thinking, if this doesn't work out, and that's deadly.
Exactly.
Because
which
then
is what
you,
we were talking about.
When things happen, and they will,
yeah,
terrible things will happen.
I wish,
then that's your first choice.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be a choice. You've made a commitment, a commitment that's lifelong. Mm-hmm. It's a covenant.
A covenant, yes. Where God has blessed and ordained this thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, okay. What would you say to people who are maybe around the corner going to be empty nesters? They've had lots of years of kids and activities and all, and not too long, maybe a year or two from now, it's going to change. And it's just them. What do you say to that?
I think one of the things that I don't even know if we planned it, but we never, ever put the children first in our relationship. We always were, it was he and I.
Mm-hmm.
And we had these kids.
And we had these kids. And one of these days, these kids are going to leave, and it's still going to be he and I.
Yeah.
So we always knew that was coming. We always prepared for it. We were actually very glad when it happened.
Yeah.
Do you remember an example of that where, you know, you have kids underfoot, but you're really prioritizing you two? What's that look like? I don't know the parents know what that looks like.
We didn't argue in front of the children. We would try to work it out ourselves.
I don't think they ever heard us. That's one of the things, in fact, that now they're in their 50s now.
Yeah, your children.
54, 6, yes. 8. And one of them said, not too terribly long, I don't remember you ever saying anything bad to mommy.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I didn't think like that. I got quiet, remember? Mm-hmm. I got quiet because I didn't want to hurt.
Continued,
but you had your own relationship
together.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We did square dancing. We were
all the stuff
active
we did
in the church. There were several things we did that did not involve the children.
Yeah.
We were always looking for babysitters.
Yeah. And we had fun on those times.
Yeah.
And then.
And when they left, we really kicked our heels.
Now we can afford to do some things we'd only talked about.
Yeah.
So when the kids leave, you had a little more expendable money and you could put your foot on the gas.
Time.
And so what were some of those first things that you like?
Travels. Oh, boy, did we travel.
Where did you go?
Europe.
Wow.
England. Hawaii.
Jane's father was.
You're not talking about Paris, Texas, right? Yeah.
Right.
Paris. Jane's dad was killed in the war. He was buried over there for a while, and then they moved him back in 49 to Memphis.
Okay.
But her brother, we talked about this for a while, to go see where he was actually buried, one of those World War II cemeteries you'd see on things. And I found a place that did a World War II tour.
Yeah.
And would take you to places. One of them was the cemeteries. Yeah. And so I signed up for that. But before that, Kathleen now, our oldest daughter, she had promised, remember this Anglophile over here, taught English high school, taught English college,
yes,
has a master's in English and all that stuff, big Anglophile. She promised her for years. She's the pharmacist. She promised her for years. She was going to take her to England.
Okay.
And
Oxford.
Finally.
Yes. Yeah. Oxford.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Stratford.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever that was in
96.
Okay. Before we moved to Sugar Land, in fact.
He had not retired yet.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so she took her for 2 weeks, a long time, just them.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let me go. I wanted to go. But that was a fulfillment of that dream that she'd started high school, whenever it was, years before. We didn't think it was going to ever happen.
Right. Right.
And then after that.
When he retired, then we started traveling on a regular basis.
We did the World War II tour, and then that was kind of fun. So we went back to England, she and I, this time on another tour. And then we discovered
Cruising.
Okay. Wow.
50th anniversary.
Folks at home can't see. Your face is just both lit up. Yeah. Okay.
50th anniversary.
Okay.
We talked about this for 5 or 29 years, and we said, this would be a nice 50th anniversary. Yeah. And I set up a cruise.
Yes.
For 2 weeks, went to Alaska and all those places through there.
Yeah.
We had a cruise, and we discovered cruising.
Yes. Okay.
We've been on six or seven.
Now, is there any part of you that thinks we discovered this 20 years too late?
We couldn't have afforded it.
Yeah.
Right.
Didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
It's always been very, very careful with money.
Mm-hmm. I was tight. And I was stingy.
Really. And so we spend our raising kids' time being very careful. And as a result, he had a lot saved. Yeah. So it was because of his frugality.
Yeah. So what's some of your favorite? If I'm going to go on a cruise, Blake, here's the two things you need to make sure you enjoy on a cruise.
You mean places?
Or just like
food.
The food? Okay.
Food.
Yeah.
Food, yes.
Oh, man. We ate like pigs, but we worked too. But
take as many excursions as you can afford to get off the ship, because it does get a little tight.
They typically, depending on where you're going, they typically have some really good excursions that you pay for ahead of time.
Yeah.
My idea, and I told her that when we started traveling, my plan, you have to do it like this. Remember that? Control and all like this.
Yeah, you weren't aware you guys were the same rank. You thought you were a senior. She was a junior officer. Okay. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, he thought I was a pushover.
But I found out real quick. Huh?
Yes.
The fact is, I've told her this 2 or 3 times, maybe more. I'm scared of you. Really?
You ever wonder in God's wisdom that he's really wise in not giving you a pushover?
I don't know what it would have been like. We probably would not be married if I'd have had a pushover, because I'd got tired of that. And
I don't know about that. You probably would be, but I bet you wouldn't have had as much fun.
Yeah, probably too. Yeah, whatever. I was going to say about the cruising and all like that. Taking the excursions. What else were we going to do? He asked me about things we did.
Do you have one planned in the future?
No.
Okay.
I'm afraid not.
We're to the point physically now.
Okay.
And plus the pandemic and all of that. But it's not going to be fun, because it would be physically demanding.
Okay. Exhausting.
The last one we took, which was 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
Three years ago.
Right at the beginning, before the pandemic, we went to Panama. We flew to Fort Lauderdale. Went through the canal, went back up to Los Angeles.
You guys aren't messing around. This is not some little like Galveston to Mexico. No, you're not. Okay.
We did
Panama,
we did
the country.
We did one of those too.
The canal.
We did too.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we talked about the canal, and we said, "Pooey, it's going to be another $500. Let's go through the whole shebang."
Yeah.
And we did.
Hmm.
And it was wonderful. It really was.
Yeah.
But I think we're getting realistic about our time in life.
It's physically demanding, and it wasn't. There were 6 cruises. It wasn't that great.
Yeah.
We were beginning to accumulate points, if you will, or seniority for them. They were treating us special. But,
What would you say to a couple who may be dating, and you know, they're thinking about getting married, or a couple who's engaged? You know, they're not married yet. What would you say to them? Here's some advice for a marriage that can last 6 decades.
One thing that really stuck out with me as my children went through their own marital problems, you have an easier time when you have similar backgrounds.
Okay.
If you and your fiancé have two totally different worlds that you've come from, it's hard.
Yeah.
It is very hard. I think you probably battle that your entire marriage, as long as you have family and you're close enough, you know, to be involved in other families. Another thing is make sure they have something in common, a hobby, a passion, a belief in prayer, a common faith.
Spiritual foundation.
Yeah,
you should have a spiritual foundation before you ever start.
Right. Before you ever even start dating.
Yeah.
It's that
I can't date somebody if I couldn't marry them.
Yeah.
Right.
That was part of it. Yeah. I didn't know it at the time, but that's part of it.
Yeah.
You're playing with fire if you date and say, "Oh, I'm not going to get involved with this guy. We're just going to have a good time.
Hormones kick in. You love that girl or boy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And woo. And they're always different after you've married.
Mm-hmm.
You learn things that you didn't know.
Yeah.
And I don't particularly remember keeping things from her, but I'm sure she saw things in me that she'd never seen before.
Right. Let me ask you a question. What's one of your favorite things about the other person?
You go first.
I'll take a compliment. Thank you very much.
Yes. Speak right in the mic here.
His faithfulness.
Mm.
No matter what, no matter how awful I'm being, he's faithful.
That's true.
He loves me, no matter what.
Yeah.
And I've been pretty bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I've tested his faithfulness. Yeah. I've tested his patience.
Yeah.
Many times.
And how meaningful is that? You know, someone you mentioned, in some ways orphaned, you know, as a young person. How meaningful has that been, this faithfulness, long faithfulness?
Well, I had no father. I had no role model of a marriage.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's been my problem with him. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand what it was to have a father.
Yeah. But you knew the guy should propose. You knew that part.
Right. I knew he had trouble with words and, you know, that kind of stuff. But
verbose is the word, I think.
Just knowing that he's faithful has been so secure.
Yeah. So even though you didn't have this role model background, God has been enough for you guys to kind of find your own way.
Right.
When you didn't have a template to follow or a playbook to
follow. In fact, from the time I was 16, I had no one. Hmm. Encouraging my spiritual walk.
Wow.
And yet I went to
a
Baptist college.
Yeah.
I continued to believe in God. I continued to read the Bible. I continued to go to church. Things that at that age you tend to drift away.
Right. When you have support, you drift away.
Even when you have support.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was faithful, and he's been faithful to us in many, 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 many ways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Ed, you let that in? Yes. What would you say? What's one of your favorite things about Jane? Well,
I love for her to pray for me.
Mm. Mm. To hear her pray for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really? Now, I historically, maybe... reputationally and all, I get to do the praying in our family, that kind of thing. But
the crooner gets to pray too.
Well, I'm not a crooner, but whatever. but I love to have her pray.
Yeah.
And sometimes we'll get together, the kids will call us about something, or we'll face something, and I say, you pray. Because I like that, and that's been a good thing. Another thing, which is secondary, I love the way she's, how can I say this? And you hear my heart. I think she's changed physically, physcally, money-wise, from when we started. Because I was the saver, she was the, I was the saver and she was the spender.
Mm-hmm.
And then the older we've gotten, all she's become more of the cautious financially. And I've been literally, I've loosened up a massive
throw money around.
I don't throw it around, but I'll attempt stuff and do stuff and all like that. What'd you do with my husband? That kind of thing. But I love that too. Well, we both changed, I guess.
We've changed.
Yeah,
we've changed, and I appreciate that. That to me, that goes back to the commitment thing.
Yeah,
I'm in for the long haul, and so if I don't like the way you are right now, then I'm going to hang in there because tomorrow, and that's true. I can remember. Bible says don't go to bed with your wrath or while you're angry. I'm paraphrasing. But I'd say I can remember sometimes I'd go to bed so angry and wake up the morning and there's this sweet woman over there and but it goes away.
Mm.
That's another thing. We've recovered pretty much everything where we've had serious disagreements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything. and they didn't last very long.
Well, we have learned to evaluate our battles, which are important and which are not.
I still have trouble with that.
Yes, he does.
I still have trouble with that. Pick your battles.
Pick your battles.
Yes, everything's
nothing,
a problem.
Nothing is terribly, terribly important in the long run.
Yeah. Mm. I spent my
whole few things are really worth fighting about.
Right.
Yes.
Is that something that, you know, we have a couple hundred marriages in this congregation. And is that something that if, you know, 200, 300 couples, okay, well, let's commit to, we're going to actually fight very few battles. Would that dramatically change how people experience marriage?
Maybe age.
Okay.
We don't have
you
too
do.
Many
you
battles,
change your priorities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the outcome of a battle is always so painful. Why bother? I mean, just
the collateral damage isn't really worth it.
You right. don't win.
Yeah. Right.
Why fight a battle if you're not going to win? Because you don't win. I don't care if you win.
Even if you win the battle, you have
you
so many
win.
Losses.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Young people today, they have so many things that are important to them that really aren't.
Mm.
And they haven't discovered that yet.
In the big scheme of things.
In the big scheme of things.
Yeah.
Right. And they are blessed. They don't realize how blessed they are until something really terrible happens. And then they begin to evaluate. That was important.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's something we're constantly, in fact, today, we're constantly talking about that. Somebody might look at us externally and maybe spend some time and look at us and you don't have much. You don't have things and stuff like that. We're not, we're retired, making it like that. But we commented this morning, said, we are so blessed.
Yeah,
we are so blessed. Sometimes I'll be eating and something. We look at it and eat the stuff. Man, that tastes good, looks good, smells. We are so blessed. Little things bless us now. They don't have to be humongous things. Little things are blessings.
Yeah.
And they are. We're both healthy. We're both strong. We're both vertical. We're both alive. We're both. She speaks to me every day. That's a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I speak to her every day.
Yeah.
So we're blessed.
Well, one last question I have for you is, if you were to kind of summarize marriage for a 10-year-old, you know, grandma, grandpa, you know, what's marriage like? Should I get married? How would you advise a youngster? You know, in 10-year-old language.
That's hard.
Yes, I'm sitting here racing my mind. And,
I would think.
Now you've had a lot of 10-year-olds run through your home and grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Right. Marriage is kind of like two best friends that kind of hang on to each other, and they have each other's back. And a 10-year-old understands that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's not always easy. Sometimes you disagree with your best friend, but you know he's always there for you, and you're always there for him.
Yeah. Good.
Life's hard without a best friend.
Life's, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. Yes.
How do you treat your wife as one of the best things you can show your kids and grandkids?
Mm-hmm.
How do you treat your wife? And I don't mean hang on to her and kiss her all the time, because we don't do that much. Uh-oh, we don't. But I've had my kids tell me, and this is Kathleen, maybe whoever it was, they've commented on the fact that we've watched you for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
We know you get upset with each other, but I told you that at the beginning. I've never heard you really blow up at each other. And we do, but it's privately. She does more than me. It's true. But it's private. We don't allow the kids in on that.
Yeah.
The other thing I think, and the 10-year-old might not understand this, but I think the other thing is where we sort of began our discussion today, commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Commitment's a major, major thing.
Yeah.
It's a big decision. It's hard because you're committing to somebody who's not you.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they have my best interest in you're committing.
Yeah.
And let them prove that they have my best interest. And I think that's one of the things that I say. Another thing would say is, do you have her, man?
Yeah.
You have her best interests. That's important.
And over time, this other person has proved to you they do.
Yes.
And that makes this best friendship so very satisfying, really. And so very, you've given me great joy talking to you. And, I've been married, it'll be 25 years. So less than half.
Just a kid.
Just a kid. Oh, you have so much to learn. Yeah. And I do. But it gives me great just hope and joy of, really the decades to come.
One more thing.
Yes.
In that too. I think this is something that I've been amazed at her, and I do. It's trust is another important thing. I trust you. I'm a gadfly. I work the room when I'm out. She sits back in the back. She's not a people person like I am. And yet it doesn't bother her if I have girlfriends and boyfriends and kid friends and like that, as opposed to you're hitting on them all the time. I'm talking about the girls, of course, and that kind of stuff. And I have never felt that with her, that she trusts me.
Trust you. Yeah.
She trusts me. And I won't violate that trust. I get that once I figure out she trusts me. I said, I'm not about to violate that trust. I don't care for the temporary moment, pleasure, whatever. Trust. Well,
and Jane, thank you so much for sitting down with me today and sharing a little look into your life. I want to thank you for listening. And if someone came to mind during this conversation that would be encouraged by its content, please send them a link and invite them to listen too. If you have heard, after you've heard a few episodes, do us a favor and give us a review wherever you listen to podcasts. This makes us feel warm and fuzzy inside, but it also makes the podcast easier for people to find. If you have suggestions for other stories, you can contact me, Blake@grandparkway.org. Until next time, for another story you've missed.